Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 395 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, my man?
I'm doing good, my man. How about you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. You know that's the truth, my man. We're going to dive straight into the review part of the show. This one took place last week at the Magna Centre in Rotherham, Yorkshire, United Kingdom over here. The fight that topped the card, it was a Dennis Hobson promotions card. The fight that topped the card. Tommy Frank, now 15-3 with a draw. He was TKO'd in round 10 by a friend of the show, Jay Harris, former world title challenger, now 20-3. It was for the British flyweight title. Tommy Frank dethroned there. His corner threw the towel in round 10. I kind of expected Jay Harris to win that one quite comfortably, I felt. But I did say on last week's show he wasn't really in the best of form. Neither guy really was in the best of form. But obviously Jay Harris had operated at a much higher level than Tommy Frank had. And for that reason, I felt that he was probably going to be able to pull it off. But I was quite surprised that he got him out of there late on as well. So, yeah, credit to Jay Harris. Good win for him there. Now the new British flyweight champion. Moving out now to the 801 Event Center in Salt Lake City, Utah. Over here, we had one fight to mention. John Bryant, the prospect, now 8-0. A majority decision over six rounds against former world champion DeMarcus Chop Chop Corley. He's now 52-35 with a draw. I really hope that finally he's had enough. He lost obviously narrowly. It was only a majority decision loss for him over six, so it must have been quite close. But yeah, I've got a lot of time for DeMarcus Corley. I had him on the show a few years ago. Nice guy, quite a interesting character to say the least. But obviously when you actually hear his story, I think his brother got murdered by one of his own school friends over about $200 or something. Someone paid this guy to murder Chop Chop's brother, and Chop Chop's brother had a bunch of kids, and then when his brother got murdered, Chop Chop took all of his kids in his own house with his kids. So I think he's providing for about 27 different kids, and that's why he kept boxing for such a long time. So it's quite a sad story, and he's a nice guy, but very colourful character. And for that reason, got a bit of a soft spot for him. Sad to see him racking up his 35th loss here, though. I think at some point, hopefully soon, he decides to forget it all. Moving now, though, to the big one. We've flown over here. We're at the Estadio Ekron in Zapopan, Jalisco, Mexico. Over here, it was live on DAZN. The promoter of the show, Eddie Hearn, in association with Eddie Reynoso and Saul Canelo Alvarez himself. Let's start, though, with the undercard. We're going to touch on this one here. Oleksandr Gvozdik, friend of the show, former WBC light heavyweight world champion. He was having his 20th pro fight. He's now 19-1. A TKO for him in round 6 against Rickards Bolotnik's now 19-7 with a draw. It was an interesting fight going in. And I said that. I said, you know, Gvozdik's been obviously massively inactive. You know, he took a long time out after losing to Beterbiev, come back with just one fight and went all six rounds with his opponent, who had been stopped a few times, and he didn't get him out of there, but he did win every round. So it was a bit like, what has Gvozdik got left? And I'm not still entirely sure that we actually got the answer to that question from his display. But he had obviously a bit too much for Bolotnik's, but the early rounds were just kind of quite boring, quite non-eventful, and when he, I guess, like a switch turned in round six, and he just started upping the, you know, the aggression and all the rest of it, and managed to get Bolotniks out of there. It all come to an end real quickly for Bolotniks. Good win, I guess, for Gvozdik. Moving up the card once again, we saw Gabriel Valenzuela move to 27-3 with a draw, a split decision win over 10 rounds against Steve Spark, who's now 16-3. It was for the WBA Intercontinental Super Lightweight title. Extremely close fight. I did say it was probably going to be a really good one. I think it was a good one. Probably stole the show on the undercard. Probably stole the show on the card itself, to be honest with you. Steve Spark, I said it on last week's show, obviously had a win over Montana Love, that disqualification win, whereas Gabe Valenzuela had the loss. But yeah, I mean, it didn't really mean too much going into the fight. Both guys were in decent form, and it was always, I think, going to be a good one, and it was a good one. I think Steve Spark may have possibly just about nicked it for me, but I wasn't really strictly scoring it. But yeah, it was a good fight, like I say, and yeah, Gabriel Valenzuela, the Mexican, gets it in Mexico. No real argument either way. It was that close of a fight, but yeah, wouldn't mind seeing a rematch, and certainly not the end of Steve Spark as well. I think he can certainly come again. Moving up the card, Julio Cesar Martinez now 20-2, a TKO for him in round 11 against Ronald Batista, who's now 15-3. It was for the WBC World Flyweight title, a defense there for Martinez. Slow start for Martinez, you know. I just don't think he's the same fighter anymore. His style was never obviously one for longevity in the sport. You know, the way he'd kind of fight face first, and, you know, it was exciting to watch, but obviously you sit there thinking his shelf life is not going to be a long one. And, yeah, he did get a knockdown that was ruled a slip, but then in between the rounds, there was quite a controversial move from Mauricio Suleiman to go over there and demand a replay, which determined it was actually a knockdown. So Martinez did win that round 10-8. I can't really remember which round that was, to be honest with you, at the minute. But yeah, anyway, managed to get to his opponent, I guess, slowly in the end. But for a long time, the knockout did not look likely, but he did, like I say, get it in round 11. So I guess better late than never for him. And then moving to the main event, Saul Canelo Alvarez now 59-2 with two draws, a unanimous decision over 12 rounds against John Ryder, now 32-6. John Ryder, friend of the show, really nice guy. Down in round 5, Ryder. And I want to say down again. I think he was down twice. Can't really remember now. But it was a defense there of Canelo's undisputed titles, WBC, WBA, WBO, IBF. First round, I felt, was quite a cagey one from both guys. I didn't think John Ryder was overwhelmed at all by the occasion. But yeah, he was being careful. Canelo let go of his left hook to the body a couple of times. Canelo round for me. Round two was a close one. I think Canelo was just looking real relaxed at that point. Just so comfortable in there. And I don't know if he's just got a good poker face or what, but he always looks very relaxed in the ring. And yeah, John was unable to really get through the guard of Canelo at all. He couldn't pierce that guard. Round three, Canelo busted John Ryder's nose badly. And it was early on in the round as well, when the blood was gushing out instantly. I didn't necessarily think John had a bad round. You know, he still landed some nice shots himself, but it was hard to give him the round. Round four, I gave to Canelo. Round five, obviously, down went John Ryder. It was a straight 1-2, I believe. He got back up, seemed to kind of just shake him up and shake him and wake him, if you want to say. You know, he started coming forward and throwing big shots himself, but obviously lost the round 10-8. Round 6, I felt at that point Ryder probably had the best round he'd had. I think he probably just thought, F this, I'm just going to give it my all. And he took a completely different approach. He wasn't that careful. He started to gamble and throw with Canelo. And, you know, he looked good at times. He showed a lot of heart. He got a lot of people's respect, including Canelo's, in that sixth round. Round seven, I felt Canelo was starting to break Ryder down again. And round eight, again, Ryder tried his best, you know, showed his balls, kept throwing and coming forward, certainly earned his payday. There was no quitting him at all. And yeah, I mean, for the rest of the fight, he just kept coming, you know. And I've heard a lot of people say it, and I agree 1,000,000%. You know, the corner could have threw the towel in because of the blood. They could have threw the towel in because he'd been down once or twice. They could have threw the towel in, you know, because he looked a bit shaky at times when he took some shots flush, but you know, the corner didn't, and he didn't want to quit. And yeah, he certainly earned his paycheck. Like I say, I think he showed a hell of a lot of bravery. And if we're going to say, or I guess not say, but compare it to the other guys at Canelo's box recently, then I think John Ryder has, you know, has done well to lose there by unanimous decision, to actually go 12 rounds with Canelo, one of the best fighters in the world. For John Ryder to do that is excellent when you think Canelo took out the likes of Billy Joe Saunders, Caleb Plant, you know, the list goes on. Obviously, Callum Smith, I don't think, won a round against Canelo. Obviously, knocked out Kovalev, knocked out Rocky Fielding, a guy that Ryder had previously lost to, you know. So, yeah, knocked out, obviously, Amir Khan, Liam Smith. The list goes on. It really, really does. So, yeah, I think he can take a bit of... what's the word? I'm not sure pride is the right word, but he can take something away, some kind of positivity away from not getting stopped. Because when he was down in that fifth round, it looked like the end was near. And I was looking at the betting in play, and like, you could pretty much, you know, you could pretty much make huge money if you bet on the fight to go the distance at that point. It did not look like that was going to happen. But considering he got back up and did another seven rounds after that round, I take my hat off to John Ryder. But as for Canelo, Eddie, I don't want to talk too much about John Ryder. He lost the fight, obviously, but Canelo gets another win against another credible opponent. You know, it just adds to his impeccable resume, let's be completely honest. And, you know, we know this guy is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And this guy has been involved in a hell of a lot of fights now. Obviously, that was his 59th win. He's got two losses and two draws. So what's that, 63 pro fights. He's been a pro since he was 15 years of age. Some people already saying that he is coming down the slide and he's not quite the fighter he was a few years ago. I want to know if you saw it like that, and what did you just make of the fight as a whole?
It actually turned out to be a good fight, an interesting fight. You know, I mean, even though Canelo was in control most of the fight, landing shots, what I really like about John Ryder was obviously his heart and determination to all of us, you know, like say you hit the switch and just decided. And a lot of these guys don't have these FU moments. Like, they'll be getting beat and they'll just think, man, you know, maybe I could just stay in the corner and sit on a stool. He took a different approach. He had the heart enough to get in there and to, like you said, with one of the best fighters of this era, at least, you know, doing his thing. And the one thing also that you mentioned was, you know, a lot of people saying Canelo's starting to go down the line or coming down the slide, I think is what you said. It's getting, like, I guess, a little long in the tooth, a little old. I mean, it could possibly be happening. I think in this fight, John Ryder was landing more shots than you would have seen in previous Canelo fights. If you think about it, like when he fought like Danny Jacobs and different guys like that, he was at times virtually invisible. You know what I mean? He was like making these guys look crazy in like some of the other fights he's had. So, you know, it could be, or it could have just been that Canelo was focusing more on trying to get the guy out of there, trying to dominate in a close range. Also, look at the size of the ring was also maybe a tactic to say, I want to get the stoppage here. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I think as a whole, I look at there's positives from both sides. Obviously, John Ryder, I think, did a hell of a job considering the other opponents he's fought and what he's done and how he stopped guys and guys who would be considered more than what John Ryder is. He stopped, beat handily or whatever. So, you know, you got to give him credit for that. He stood in there when like you were saying, a lot of people were saying he could have got taken out of there at any point. The corner could have threw the towel and anything. Any of those things could have happened. But instead, he chose to stay in and fight. Went toe to toe with him for the rest of the fight. When, in most cases, if you're taking a serious beating or taking a beating in general, you're gonna say, you know, maybe let me at least move a little bit, at least try to go the distance without, you know, taking too much more punishment. He took the opposite approach, which is respectable. And all in all, I think, you know, his stock goes up in a loss. He lost to a great one. There's no shame in losing to Canelo, especially in going the distance when most expected him not to. Got to give him a lot of credit there. As far as Canelo, I mean, it's is as expected. I mean, we figured we'd see him win. He got a knockdown in there. Figured he would get the stoppage. I mean, a lot of people would have thought he would have got the stoppage. You know what I mean? But the guy was on his game as good as he possibly could have been. He was a lot tougher than probably most expected him to be in the face of a guy like Canelo. I don't think it's so much that Canelo took any steps back. I mean, maybe he did. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of hard to see right now. But in the future, you know, if there's any serious challenges, like, I don't know, the Charlo brothers or, you know, even David Benavidez, different guys step up. And
the Bivol rematch.
Bivol is another one. Yeah, we'll really get a good, accurate, a more accurate example of what he actually is at this point in his career after one of those fights. If you could say, oh, he's really taking a step back because, you know, maybe his performance doesn't live up to what we expect from a guy like Canelo. But even if it was like with a Bivol rematch, I mean, you got to understand that he's still pretty undersized there, even though he's had success at the weight. We saw that Bivol understood how to beat him. So it's hard to say, you know, with that fight. But, I mean, I don't know. You know, we'll just see. I mean, there's a lot of things that you want to kind of see Canelo do in the next few. I mean, a lot of people really want that Benavidez fight. Others want the rematch with Bivol. But, I mean, look, I'm just looking forward to seeing him do something again. I mean, obviously, it's a big spectacle every time he does come out. You know, maybe not breaking records with the pay-per-views this time, but at least doing really well. So, it's just interesting, and I'm excited to see the future for him. And I also want to see John Ryder again because I like what I saw in this fight here too.
There we go. Moving on to the final card to mention. It took place at the Results World Arena in Birmingham, West Midlands, United Kingdom. Let's start with the undercard. Ben Whittaker, I'm going to start with. He's now 3-0, a TKO for him in round 3 against Jordan Grant, now 6-4. Grant down in round 2 and round 3 prior to his corner throwing the towel in. Ben Whittaker, obviously very flashy. He made Jordan Grant's forehead and eye swell up quite quickly. And I actually didn't think his opponent would even bother coming out for round 3. I didn't think there was any need to see anymore, but he did. And obviously when he did, I think it was literally the first punch of the round that Ben threw. He was dropped by it. And yeah, like I said, a towel come in. The flashiness from Whittaker, I think, was a little bit distasteful at times because just simply really the level of his opposition. But, I mean, it is what it is. I understand he's got to sell himself to make himself a name in the pro game. So be it for that aspect. You know, I understand it. I respect it, whatever. But I wouldn't mind if he did that against someone who was expected to maybe beat him or just someone who was a big name. But to do it in your third pro fight, you know, against, I don't want to discredit Jordan Grant. He's got a winning record. He's now 6-4. But, you know, I don't want to call him a journeyman. But, you know, he's a guy that Ben Whittaker was going to beat easily. I think he was something like a 1-50 favorite. You know, you'd have to bet $50 to win a dollar. So it was no contest, really, for Ben Whittaker, Olympic medalist and all the rest of it. So to see him be that flashy with Jordan Grant, you know, it was kind of needless at times, but I get it. It's all part of the character. And I think away from the cameras, he's probably a lot different, but it does rub people the wrong way at times. Elsewhere on the card, Shakam Pitters now 18-2, a points win for him over 8 rounds against Joel McIntyre, now 20-7. That actually was a much better fight than I thought it would be. I did say I think Pitters would win definitely, but I didn't know if he'd get him out or beat him on points. Obviously ended up beating him on points. Ben Whittaker as well, I thought could perhaps have gone the distance, but that obviously didn't look likely. Corey Gibbs as well with a win. I'm happy for him because he's managed to avenge that sole defeat he had. He's now 18-1. He was able to avenge his his previous loss on points to Jimmy First when his gum shield kept falling out and he kept having points taken away by the referee. He's now 18-1, like I say, was able to beat Jimmy First on points. Jimmy First now 14-2. He was undefeated, 14-0. He's took two losses in a row there. And that's how I expected it to go. I expected Gibbs to win on points, and he did over eight rounds there. Moving up the card once again, Tyler Denny. He is now 17-2 with three draws, a split decision win over 10 rounds against McCauley McGowan, now 17-4 with two draws. It was for the EBU external middleweight title, which was vacant. I'd never heard of that belt before, and I'm still not entirely sure what it is. McGowan was cut over his left eye from a head clash. It's a really funny one, this one, because I expected Denny to win and dominate massively and perhaps even record his first stoppage. I said it on last week's show, and it was a really, really bold pick. And I understand that now, because, like I said, he'd never stopped anyone, and he's fighting a guy who's never been stopped. So that's straight away unlikely. But yeah, I thought that there's a chance it could happen. And I'd liked Denny's previous fights, the way he's been, you know, marching through and, you know, beating good fighter after good fighter. And I just thought McGowan didn't look great last time out. He got shook to his boots, even though he won the fight. He got rocked to his boots by a guy who had no knockouts. And I think Denny has looked like he's trying to get a stoppage in his last few fights. But anyways, I thought he'd massively dominate. And I spoke to Bradley Ray just before the fight. Bradley Ray, obviously friend of the show. He is a previous opponent of Tyler Denny. And I said to him, just before the fight was going to start, I just sent him a WhatsApp. And I said, I've got a feeling Denny could win this one by stoppage, you know. And he said, I think it's going to be a really close fight. And he got it absolutely bang on. A bright start from Tyler Denny. I actually expected him to have most of the success late on in the fight. But strangely enough, late on was where McGowan started to have a lot of success. And it still doesn't make sense to me, because I think McGowan has looked quite tired normally in the later parts of fights, whereas Denny's looked quite energetic. So it was all a bit strange, but yeah, made the fight really close in the end. The one judge that scored it to McGowan was well off, in my opinion, but it was still a close fight. But yeah, underwhelming performance really from Denny. I expected a much better display, but then some people didn't, and that's, I guess, why it was close in the end in a lot of people's opinions. But I thought he'd win very wide, but it wasn't to be. It was a lot closer than I thought, and some people did see it coming, namely Bradley Ray. Shout out to you, my man. Elsewhere on the card, we saw Lauren Price move to 4-0, a unanimous decision there against Kirsty Bavington, who's now 7-4 with two draws. I expected that one to go the distance and for Price to win on points. She did. It was for the vacant British welterweight title, which I think is the first time, if I'm not mistaken, that there's been a women's fight for a British title in like 125 years. That seems unbelievable, and I don't have the statistics right in front of me, but apparently that was what the case was, something like that. So brilliant stuff there for Boxer to make history. Congrats to everyone involved. Congrats to Lauren Price. 10 two-minute rounds, the victory for her. Elsewhere on the card as well, Sean McComb. This one was quite a shock. Sean McComb, he's now 16-1. It was for the WBO European Super Lightweight title. It was a 10-round unanimous decision for McComb against Casey Benjamin, now 16-3 with a draw. Benjamin started in the bookies as a big underdog. He was like a 2-1 underdog, maybe 6-4. And then he went into the favourite, whereas McComb ended up being the underdog on the actual day of the fight. I thought Benjamin would be able to win the fight. But yeah, Benjamin started out early on in the fight like with weird tactics that I just couldn't understand. It was such a bizarre performance, you know. I was really quite disappointed in him. But yeah, I thought at some point in the fight, maybe he will be able to drag Sean McComb into, you know, the trenches and possibly drown him. Obviously, we've seen McComb quit before. We've seen him quit against Gavin Gwynn, and it was a terrible quit when he quit against Gavin Gwynn. And that's the one thing that for me is like I'm going to call it, maybe like a red flag, and it's just a red flag that's never going to go away now. It's like a dark cloud, I guess, is probably a better word to use, a dark cloud over Sean McComb's career just because of that quit. And yeah, you know, Gavin Gwynn's not really a big puncher, etc., etc. So because he quit in that fight there, I thought there's a chance that Casey Benjamin could be the guy to drown him in the trenches. But obviously, Benjamin's not really a banger or anything. I think you probably need to be a bit... Well, I say that, Gavin Gwynn, so I don't know. But anyways, McComb actually boxed way better than I expected. It was a good action fight, and Casey Benjamin did seem to hurt McComb at times. But again, I was just so unimpressed by Benjamin's performance as a whole. And I think he may have just struggled with the southpaw stance of McComb, you know? He just seemed to not really be able to work it out. But yeah, Casey Benjamin as well, you know, at times would just square himself up. You know, he had no head movement and he was just getting his head jabbed off, really, while McComb was just dancing around him. So it was a good win for McComb. And like I say, I will give him that. I'm not his biggest fan, obviously, and I think there's question marks, obviously, you know, since he lost to Gavin Gwynn. But I'll be the first person to say well done, congratulate him. And yeah, I was impressed with the way he won. So it's a great win for him, you know, moving on to bigger and better things now, because he was much better than Benjamin on the night. And then, yeah, the main event, Joshua Buatsi, now 17-0, a unanimous decision over 10 rounds against Pavel Stepien, who's now 18-1 with a draw. He loses his O. Yeah, it was just a boring fight, man. Josh Buatsi, I mean, everyone's saying it was more like a sparring session. One thing I do want to point out as well, Josh Buatsi has gone 11, 12 and 10 rounds in his last three fights, you know. He went 11 with Rickards Bolotniks, he went 12 with Craig Richards, and he's now gone 10 with Pavel Stepien. He banks some perhaps much needed rounds coming off a long layoff, but only if he's going into a big fight next. And yeah, he did need rounds if he's going to go in with top opposition next time, but also he needed better performances than this to want anyone to want to see those fights, you know. So I don't know if that made much sense, but yeah, he could come back with a bang and we're gonna go, oh my god, he's the best thing ever, we need to see him in a massive fight. Or he can come back in a snooze fest, bank the rounds, and I guess he needs them if he's gonna take on one of the big guys. It's like a double-edged sword, if you like. But yeah, you know, He I think needed to perform a little bit better than he did. He didn't make a splash. Obviously, it was his debut with Boxer, you know, on Sky Sports again. And yeah, you know, it's crazy. We were seeing videos on social media of fans leaving right in the middle of the fight. And I don't want to be too mean here, but obviously Lawrence Okolie was saying his piece after the fight, and he was saying it was a good performance. And I thought, hang on a minute, how dare you say that? And then I remembered he boxed David Light last time out, and that was also a terrible, terrible performance. So for Lawrence Okolie to say that, it just made me laugh, kind of thing. It was very much like Okolie Light Volume 2 in two different bodies. But yeah, I don't want to go in too hard on Buatsi. I've given my piece on him before. I think it's very frustrating following his career. Everyone thought he had all the promise, and he's been the slowest of all that crop of Olympians to actually get a move on. So yeah, he needs to step up, and hopefully that's the last boring fight we see of his, and hopefully it's a big one next. We can't really wait too much longer as fans. But anyway, that is it though for the review part of the show. The final thing for me to do just now is to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the reigning and undefeated female WBA bantamweight world champion. It is, of course, Miss Nina Hughes. Nina, welcome to the show.
Hiya. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Nina. So this is the first time we've had you on, so welcome once again. Let's start from the very beginning, if we can. How did you first ever get into boxing, Nina? I'm guessing you were a late starter.
Yeah, I fell into it by accident. I did a boxer size run today. Really enjoyed that. Then joined a kickboxing gym, just purely for fitness sessions. Then joined a boxing gym, purely for fitness only. And I was talked into competing. And had my first fight, won that, and went on from there.
And how many fights as an amateur did you have, or do you not remember?
I counted a while ago, 74.
74, wow. And do you remember when the year that you started fighting competitively as an amateur?
I was roughly about 25, 26.
Right, okay. So, yeah, fast forward, like I say, you turn pro December 2021 against Claudia Ferenczi. Claudia is one of the toughest journey women in boxing. I mean, boy, oh boy, yeah. Very tough to get out
she's
of there.
She's been around.
Yeah, she's certainly been around everywhere. You beat her on points over six. Do you remember much about your pro debut, Nina?
Yeah, I remember it very well. It was just an amazing experience. So different, obviously, from the amateurs. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
And obviously that same month, you wouldn't have known this, but December 2021, I put out a tweet on Twitter and I asked our followers, which female fighters should we try to get on the podcast in the future? And Lee Eaton actually said to get you on. At the time, I saw you were just 1-0 and I thought to myself, I'll remember the name, perhaps we'll come back to Nina. And yeah, because you only had the one fight and here we are. It really has been a remarkable journey. We'll get to the rest of the journey. Yeah, we've got enough time, I guess, to go through your fights. Your second fight was against another tough journey woman, Bec Connolly, again at York Hall. Bec's a nice woman from what I can see, but limited in ability. You were able to stop her in the second round. You also had her down in round one as well. Talk me through that one if you can.
Yeah, I mean, she was durable. Like, we knew she'd be tough. She was durable. She always comes to fight. She always comes to win. And she'd only been stopped a couple of times. We wasn't sort of expecting the stoppage. And, yeah, it was a lot easier than I thought. I was quite shocked when she went down in the first round. And then I knew I had her after that.
Yeah, no, you certainly did. And your third fight, again, was against the undefeated Ticey Gallagher in your backyard, Grays, Essex. It was obviously for the vacant Commonwealth title. I was actually at Ticey's fight the other week against Lisa Whiteside, and I was very impressed with her jab, with her boxing skills. Obviously, you gave her sole defeat when you beat her for the vacant Commonwealth that night back in July last year. A majority decision over 10, but talk me through that one.
It was a close-ish fight. I think I won the majority of the earlier rounds. It wasn't my best of performances, but I found a way to win, and got the win. It was for the Commonwealth title and the WBO international title, so it was good to pick up two titles early.
And Nina, what do you think of Ticey? Like I say, I've only seen her the one time and I was quite impressed. Do you think perhaps she can do big things, or perhaps not at the level of the likes of your Jamie Mitchells?
I think she's improved. She's only young, so she's got a long, if she keeps building and keep improving, you never know where you can get. So, yeah, why not?
Yeah, no, for sure. And your full fight was a Commonwealth title defence. You boxed Flora Machella. You got, again, the TKO in round two. It seems to be your favourite round to get people out. talk to me about that one.
Yeah, I mean, we'd watched her and she seemed really tough and durable. She'd given, much bigger people tough fights. And so I was expecting a tough fight. And, it finished very early, which... was good for me because it set up the fight with Jamie Mitchell just 6 weeks later, so at least I wasn't in a war just 6 weeks before.
Exactly, and there we go. Fast forward 6 weeks later, we go to Dubai. Obviously, you boxed the undefeated Jamie Mitchell, who a lot of us saw dominate Shannon Courtney. I saw Jamie Mitchell as well destroy Carly Skelly. The date, November 26th, 2022. I'm sure you'll never forget it ever. You dethroned Jamie, unanimous decision. You become the new WBA bantamweight world champion. Talk me through the fight and obviously the feeling to hear those three words and the new, and obviously to make history in just your fifth pro fight.
Oh, it was an amazing experience. I mean, we trained so hard for that fight. We were confident going in. Obviously, we put a lot of things that we've made, mistakes that we've made in earlier fights, right. Just enjoyed the whole experience going over to Dubai. The venue was amazing. It was like in the Hilton, the Palm, on a big outdoor terrace overlooking the Palm. And, I think I won most of the... I think the first round was close. And then, we just won. I felt like we was winning each round. So I was confident and I got cut. So it sort of took that we had to change tactics a bit because obviously I got cut in the sixth round and then again in the seventh round where I think she was going for my cut. So yeah, we had to change tactics and we had to box to remove to try and not get stopped. And yeah, we got the win. Happy with my performance. And yeah, it was an amazing feeling to hear them words.
And not only that, but obviously you've done it so quickly, and it's not like it was just against this obscure opponent. Like perhaps if you got kind of, I guess, fast-tracked into a, you know, a vacant title shot against a girl that no one's ever heard of, you probably wouldn't get that credit that you, I think, are getting here. Because real boxing fans will know we've seen Jamie Mitchell before. We've seen her, you know, smash up other Brits, you know. So it's a brilliant achievement, I must say.
Yeah, I really rated Jamie as a fighter. Like, she's a good fighter. I mean, it was a tough fight, but we was comfortable in there at the same time and we knew what we had to do and we knew what we had to do to beat her.
And a few days after your win, I'm pretty sure I saw Kevin Lilly, your trainer, tweeting out asking if any British fighter in history has ever won a world title in just five fights. Has it been done before? I wanted to ask, has that been verified yet?
Oh, so I don't, only by someone telling me, so I don't know, but someone told me that I was the fastest ever Brit to win a world title, male or female. I don't know if it's 100% true, but they said they researched and they looked, but I don't know.
I think it has to be. I know, obviously, you had Paul Weir do it, I think, in seven fights, Scottish fighter from years ago.
He did my cuts. He was my cuts man in that fight.
Oh, there we go. Oh, that's unbelievable. Well, he should know. You should ask him. But yeah, let's discuss your upcoming fight. Obviously, your first title defence, you'll be boxing Shannon Courtney June 10th at the Wembley Arena, live on DAZN. This is also a chance for Shannon, of course, to get her hands on her old belt. What should we, as fans, expect to see from you both, Nina?
Yeah, I think this is a chance for me to showcase my levels. I believe I'm levels above her and I'll beat her comfortably. But I think it'll be a good fight and one fans want to see. So it's a good domestic fight as well.
And how much do you rate Shannon? Because I think, I'm going to be honest, I think she gets a lot of kind of hate that I don't really think's too fair. I think she is quite a good fighter, but against Jamie Mitchell, I mean, she was extremely disappointing. And ever since then, she's been a bit hot and cold. She's been a bit inactive.
Yeah, she's an all right fighter. I think, like, she obviously, she won the world title on a vacant title. And yeah, she lost it to Jamie. But yeah, I'm expecting the best Shannon Courtney come out there, so I'm sure it'll be a good fight.
And obviously, without looking too far ahead, I wanted to ask if there were any other names you know, that you've got your eye on, I guess, in and around your division. Obviously, Ebony Bridge has got to be one that I'm sure has been thrown at you a million times.
I want to get this fight out of the way, and then I just want to target the other belts. So Ebony Bridge is hopefully next, and then Luna or Dina after that.
And my next question was actually going to be, I think you've kind of already answered it with what you've just said there. I was going to say, what would you rather be, like an undisputed champion in your division or like a multi-weight world champion? I'm going to assume undisputed.
Yeah, undisputed, definitely. If I had my time on my side, then maybe I'd go up and down the weights. But for now, undisputed would be very nice.
And obviously, because you started so late, Nina, obviously turned over quite late, you know, up in age, if you don't mind me saying. Have you kind of got an age in your head, or maybe a number of fights that you want to get to and you'll stop there, or have you not thought that far?
Yeah, I don't know. I'd say probably a couple of years, and I just want to see what else I can achieve in a couple of years. It's hard to know what opportunities to get, and obviously I have to keep winning, so I can't put exact time on it, but I can't see myself going into more than a couple of years.
Oh, there we go. No, that's interesting. And yeah, we've pretty much flown for everything. So I just wanted to say, just before we wrap it up, Nina, if you've got any closing words just to the listeners, if you want to thank any sponsors, you're more than welcome. And also, don't go without giving all the listeners your social media handles. Let them know where they can follow you.
Yeah, just thanks to all my sponsors that support me, and hope everyone will come and watch my fight on 10th of June. I'm on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, so give me a follow. And the link for tickets is on there.
Link for tickets on there. And just, where are you on Instagram? What's the handle, Nina?
_Nina Hughes.
excellent underscore Nina Hughes. So everyone go over there, give Nina a follow. Okay, listen, Nina, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you this week. Thank you for your time. Best of luck June 10th in Wembley, and I'm sure we'll speak sometime afterwards.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. We're going to start here with this one. Matchroom Boxing have actually signed two fighters to their stable. Regis Progray, friend of the show, the first one. He signed a long-term promotional deal there with Eddie Hearn. He will have his first fight with Matchroom when he defends his world title, the WBC World Super Lightweight title, against Australia's Liam Parro. That's going to be at the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans, Louisiana, on June 17th, live on DAZN. So a homecoming fight there for Regis Progray. And then the Cuban amateur sensation Andy Cruz has signed a promotional contract with Eddie Hearn as well, obviously the 2020 Olympic gold medalist, and one of the best amateurs around. So that is fantastic news there for boxing fans. We're going to get to see Andy Cruz on DAZN, so that's excellent there. In other news, Liam Smith, Chris Eubank Jr. 2, that has now been moved to July the 1st. Liam Smith, following medical advice, has had to adjust his training camp to address this minor injury that he's sustained. So yeah, that is now been moved to July the 1st. The card, as far as I'm aware, will stay the same. That is that. And I think that's about it though for the news. We're going to move now to the preview part of the show. We're going to start here with this one. It goes down tonight at the Palais des Sports in France. I'm going to assume that probably by the time you listen to this show that this fight's already probably finished. But anyways, Bastien Ballesta, 25-0 with a draw. I think he's got 5 KOs. He gets in there with Yvonne Mendy, 47-6 with a draw. It's for the IBF International Super Lightweight title. Bastien Ballesta hasn't really boxed anyone of note, to be totally honest. It's quite a big step up here against Yvonne Mendy, who I think has definitely seen better days. I think I was at his last fight when he boxed Ivan Berenchik, or Dennis Berenchik. I forgot the guy's. Is it Ivan? I've forgotten. But anyway, it was on the Fury Chisora 2 undercard in the UK. So I saw him that night there. Mendy didn't look fantastic. But anyway, gets in with this guy here. It should go the distance. That's my pick. I think it's definitely going to go the distance. Could go either way. Moving now, though, to a card that takes place tomorrow, Friday, at the Maher Centre in Leicester. Over here, just one fight to mention. It's actually a Mervyn Turner Promotions card, this one, Eddie. Mervyn, obviously part of Team Fury back in the day. But anyway, a few names on the card, but one I will mention, friend of the show, Lerone Richards, 16-0. Not sure how many rounds it is, but he gets in with Harry Matthews, who's 17-71 with 6 draws. I just do not know what they're doing with Lerone Richards. Everyone's getting very frustrated, you know, because clearly the guy is talented, but he's been so inactive. I remember he turned pro, then I think he was out for a couple of years, then he got back to it, and then he has a meaningful fight here and there, but then disappears again. It's just such a completely confusing situation, and I do not have a clue what is going on with Lerone Richards, man. It is bizarre. But the less said, the better. Let's move now to the York Hall in Bethnal Green. This one also takes place tomorrow night. I'm guessing it's going to be on BT Sport. Yeah, it's got to be on BT Sport. It's a really, really good card. Frank Warren card. I like a lot of fights on the bill. We're going to see. Let's start with this one here. Sean Noakes, 4-0. He gets in with Robin Zamora, who's 19-20. That's over 6 rounds there. Sean Noakes, I quite enjoy watching, to be honest with you, because so far as a pro, he fights a guy who's really durable, and then he knocks him out. And then he fights someone who you think, oh, he might knock this guy out, and then he goes the distance. Then he fights someone who's really durable again, knocks him out. He's quite entertaining, and you never quite know what you're going to get, but he's been excellent so far, obviously, brother of Sam Noakes. Elsewhere on that card, we're going to see Michael Soczynski, probably saying the name wrong, 6-0. I have never seen this guy fight, but he's managed to get himself on an undercard here. He's Polish. He gets in there with Israel Dufus, who's 20-9. Some people will remember Doofus went the distance with Chevron Clark last time out. It was back in February. So I'm expecting Sozinski to probably win this one on points. It's only a six rounder. I think there's some serious money to be made on that one, by the way. I just want to quickly look at the odds on that. I think it's about 6-4 for Sozinski to win on points. I'm guessing that's probably what's going to happen there. That's a good one, actually. That's a decent little bet there. Elsewhere, we have Ryan the Piranha Garner, 12-0 in a six-rounder at lightweight against Eduardo Valverde, who's 3-10 with a draw. I think Ryan Garner recently become a dad. Congrats to him. A lot of six-rounders on this card. Another six-rounder at bantamweight. Chris Bork, 11-1, gets in with Kevin Tranna, who's 15-3 with two draws. Again, Chris Bork looked pretty good last time out when he was able to beat Darwin Martinez. Kevin Tranna as well, I've seen that name before, got in there with Brad Strand last time out, lost, but prior to that was on a decent little run. Okay, what else do we have on the card? We have Carol Itauma, 9-1. His first fight back since getting stopped on the Yard Beterbiev undercard when he was stopped by Ezekiel Moderna in a huge upset. It was a massive shock there. And anyway, he returns to the ring against Khalid Gradia, who is 10-9 with four draws. Of his nine losses, he's only been stopped one time. He's 40 years of age. His one stoppage loss was back in 2017 to a guy that was 1-1. I'm not sure the circumstances behind that, but hasn't really mixed it with any top quality opposition, so I wouldn't be surprised if Itauma knocks him out. But it's going to be interesting to see what he comes back like, to be honest with you, because like I say, he was knocked out last time out and that was such a shock, and I wonder if that's dented his confidence in any way. Elsewhere on the card, another fighter that I'm quite liking the look of. He was really impressive last time out when he boxed Dex Spellman. Ellis Zorro of Lewisham. He's 15-0. He gets in with Jose Burton. That's over 10 rounds there for the WBO cruiserweight European title, which is currently vacant. Jose Burton, you'd have to say probably best days are behind him now. Hasn't looked great in recent times. Getting stopped by Dan Aziz, losing to Rickards Blotniks. Best win probably in the last few years was when he beat Liam Conroy. Hasn't looked great in recent times. I'm expecting Ellis Zorro to probably win that one, potentially on points. And then the main event, Ezekiel Moderna. Like I say, mentioned him a moment ago. The guy that knocked out Carol Itauma. He's 29-10, the Argentinian fighter. Like I say, not even really a massive puncher. 19 KOs from his 29 wins. Not really noted as a big puncher. 36 years of age. Anyway, it's for the WBC International Light Heavyweight title. He gets in with friend of the show, 15-1, Willie Hutchinson. And again, it's a really interesting fight. And it's such a risky fight, I think, for Hutchinson. Because he got knocked out by Lennox Clark. That was just over 2 years ago now. Since then, he's boxed absolutely nobody. He's had two fights, right? Absolutely nobody. And he gets in with this guy here who obviously is pretty confident. Last time he came to the UK, knocked out a fighter with probably just as much promise, really, as Willie Hutchinson, but he was undefeated. So I think that the Argentinian's confidence is going to be sky high, and Willie Hutchinson needs to pretty much be careful. There may be some tempting odds really for the Argentinian to perhaps even stop Willie Hutchinson, or just for the win might be interesting to me. I think I'm going to have a good look at the prices on this card here. Anyway, that's it for that one. Moving now to the Okada Manila Hotel and Casino in Metro Manila, Philippines. Over here, we don't go over here too often, but got a fighter over here called Philippus Ngitumbwa. Definitely saying it wrong, but who cares? His record's 12-1. It's for the WBO Global Super Bantamweight title. He gets in with former world champion John Real Casimiro, who's 32-4 these days. It's a strange fight because from what I've heard about this I want to say away fighter, but he's listed on the left, so I'm not entirely sure what's going on there. But yeah, the other fighter whose name I struggled with, Philippus something, whatever his surname is, 27 years of age, 12-1 the record with 11 KOs. The one loss was a majority decision loss on his debut. He did come back and knock out that guy, so he's avenged that loss. He gets in with Casemiro. A lot of people saying that the Namibian fighter is just coming for the payday and that Casemiro should win pretty straightforwardly. We're going to have to wait and see. Casemiro on a bit of a run as well. You've got to go back to 2017 since his last loss. In that time, he's beaten a couple of good fighters like Guillermo Rigondo, like Zalani Tete. So yeah, maybe that'll be interesting, maybe it won't, but it's worth a mention there in the Philippines. Moving out now to the Emperor's Palace in Kempton Park, South Africa. Over here, Kevin Lorena, 28-2. Again, I was at his last fight because it was on the Fury Chisora free, I think I said two earlier, Fury Chisora free undercard. Kevin Lorena, 28-2. Obviously, we saw him get in there with Daniel Dubois last time out, and that was a mad old fight. I couldn't believe my eyes when he had Dubois down in the first round. But anyway, he returns to the ring here. He gets in with Riyad Murray, who is 31-1 with 26 KOs. Can't really say I'm familiar with this guy here, but that's going down at, oh okay, it's going down at heavyweight. I thought that this guy Mary was a cruiserweight, but again, I'm not entirely sure I know too much about the guy. Moving now though to the Stockton Arena in Stockton, California, USA. I'm guessing this one will be on Sky, I'm guessing. But anyway, for the US fans, it's going to be on ESPN and ESPN Plus. Couple fights to mention on the undercard. We've got Amado Vargas, the son of Jesus, man. My brain is just not with it today, man. Eddie, you're going to have to help me out. Amado Vargas, the son of...
Oh, Fernando Vargas.
Fernando Vargas, there we go. Sorry. So yeah, he's 6-0. He's in a 6-rounder against Bernardo Manzano, 2-4. We've also got Ruben Villa, or Villa, I think it said, 19-1. He gets in with Michael Villagrana, who's 16-4. Ruben Villa probably to win that one on points. Still has that one sole defeat to Manuel Navarrete, which was back in October 2020. He's been quite inactive, just the one fight since then, a knockout just over a year ago against Horacio Garcia. So I need to see him back active. Elsewhere on the card, we have Janibek Alimkanuli, 13-1. Sorry, not 13-1, 13-0. Everyone pronounces his name a little bit different, but he defends his WBO World Middleweight title against Canada's Stephen Butler, 32-3, all three losses. He's been stopped in Jose Macias with one, Ryota Murata with one, and Brandon Cook with one, all losses against him. However, he is coming off four wins in a row. This is a fight for Janibek to look pretty good. You know, last time out, obviously saw him in with Denzel Bentley, went the distance, and you know, it was very disappointing in the eyes of most of the boxing fans around the world that expected him to walk through Denzel Bentley. I was one of them. We all were, to be honest with you. He was knocking everyone out. You know, he'd beaten world champions, knocked out world champions all in a row, gets in with Denzel Bentley and somehow goes the distance. But yeah, I think Butler, you know, Butler is quite aggressive and Butler can punch as well. But I think because of that, he's going to leave himself open and probably end up getting stopped round about the mid rounds or something. But yeah, could be wrong. Should be interesting. Always is good to see Janibek fight. And the main event, Jason Maloney, 25-2. It's for the vacant WBO World Bantamweight title. He gets in with Vincent Astrolabio, who's 18-3. That's, of course, over 12 rounds there for the vacant world title. All the best to Jason Maloney. We, of course, had his twin brother, Andrew Maloney, on the show last week, and he said that Jason is boxing better than ever in camp and seems to be well up for this. He's the favourite to win, and hopefully he does win. It'd be great to see him become become world champion as well, just like his twin brother Andrew. It's crazy because they're identical twins. I said it last week, identical twins, identical records, both 25-2. Andrew's been a world champion, Jason hasn't. They're both fighting a week apart. Andrew's fighting not this weekend but next weekend. They're both going to be working each other's corners, and they're both fighting for vacant world titles in America from Australia against Asian fighters. So all the best to both brothers there. Can Jason do it? I think so. It'd be good to see him finally get there. Moving out now to the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas in Las Vegas, Nevada over here. It's going to be live on Showtime. Couple fights to mention. On the undercard, Rancis Barthelemy, 29-2 with a draw. He's in a 10-rounder there at super lightweight against Omar Juarez, who's 14-1. Omar Juarez, I remember when he turned pro, there was a lot of hype behind him. He was supposed to be, you know, a really promising prospect, certainly one to watch and all the rest of it. But suffered a shock loss to Ali Rivera. It was only a majority decision over 10 rounds, but Juarez was down in the fight and lost very narrowly. Rivera hasn't fought since then, so it's kind of unknown where he's at. But yeah, obviously since then Juarez has come back with 3 wins, including, you know, a split decision win over 10 rounds against Ryan Carl, which I don't think looks too great. I remember Ryan Carl getting smashed to bits by Mario Barrios. So that might show you levels there. But yeah, anyways, Juarez, when he fought Rivera, that's a common opponent, I do want to point out as well, because Rivera obviously beat him, but Rivera, in the very fight before fighting Omar Juarez, lost to Rancis Barthelemy pretty much every round. So I don't know if you want to read into that, but I think, you know, obviously triangle theories don't work, but when a guy fights 2 guys in a row, loses wide to one and then beats one narrowly, you know, literally one after the other, I think you can probably get a quite accurate reading of what we're probably going to see. So I would say Rancis Barthelemy probably will win this, probably on points in a snooze fest. So we'll see how close I get to that being right this time next week. Elsewhere on the card as well, I really, really like this fight, and it's massively gone under the radar. I haven't seen many people talking about it, but I think it's a great fight. We're going to see Batir Akhmadov, who's changed his name on BoxRec to Botizon Akhmadov. I'm not sure what that's about, but anyway, 9-2 with 8 KOs. I remember his unbelievable fight with Mario Barrios. Since then, come back with 2 wins, but then lost last time out on a split to Alberto Pueyo. He gets in with friend of the show, Kenneth Sims Jr., who's 19-2 with a draw, on a decent little run as well since losing to Samuel Teo back in 2018. He's put together 6 wins in a row, and last time looked quite good, knocking out Rock Merfel. But yeah, anyway, should be a good one. I think this is a really, really good fight. I think we're going to probably see it go to distance. I wouldn't be surprised if Akhmadov won this on points, which I think is about 4-1. I wouldn't be surprised if Kenny Sims won this on points, which is just over evens. I don't think Kenny Sims is going to win by KO, but I think this could steal the show, actually, and it could actually steal the fight. You know, it could become the best fight of the weekend, but no one's really talking about it. And then moving up to the main event, Rolando Romero, 14-1. It's for the WBA Interim World Super Lightweight title. It's over 12 rounds. He gets in with Ismael Barroso, who's 24-3 with 2 draws. A lot of people scratching their head as to how on earth Barroso managed to get himself in a position to fight for for some version of a title anyway. 40 years of age now. I'll tell you exactly why, because the guy's coming off 4 wins in a row, and they're decent wins. You know, he beat Yves Ulysse Jr., I think, on one of those wins, and last time out, beat Fernando Salcedo. Again, these are not, I mean, I've always rated Yves Ulysse, but the other guys, they're not excellent, you know? But yeah, they've got him the shot. I think it was going to be Rolando Romero against Alberto Pueyo, but Pueyo pulled out for whatever reason. I think it was something to do with a drugs test or something, and he was pulled out the fight, and then in stepped Ismael Barroso. So yeah, I mean, I don't think this fight goes a distance. Probably be interesting while it lasts. Romero, I'd say, is probably going to have bit too much for Barroso at this point. I'm expecting Romero probably to stop him. And then, yeah, the final card to mention goes down on Saturday at the Seagate Convention Center in Toledo, Ohio, USA, over here. Just one fight to mention. Always going to mention this guy because he's a friend of the show. It's Albert Bell, 22-0. Again, haven't seen him in the ring since he tragically lost his mother. And yeah, that was back in January. And then he also was involved in a car crash as well. And that put him out for a few weeks. But he returns apparently in a 10-rounder here. No opponent just yet. Not entirely sure if it's definitely going to go ahead because it's obviously late on in the week now and it still says no opponent. So I'm not sure what's going on there. But anyway, that's about it though for the preview part of the show. In part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest. In part two, we did the news part. I've just wrapped up the preview part. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 395 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the reigning and undefeated female WBA bantamweight world champion, Miss Nina Hughes. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in to this week's show. That's about everything from myself, though. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again next week.